But this little dink ball, you know, the one in a crowded area where it's a fist pass, the weight is taken over, hits the ground, and it bounces into a fella's chest.
Why do you not do many interviews?
Oh, really? Yeah, I wasn't being asked to do a whole pile.
Really?
Yeah. Have you ever rang me?
And they're roaring at me, "Hey, Cuffrey, you free state bastard." And next thing I hear, "You have no fucking jurisdiction up here."
So we have Division 3 champions, Conor. Derry, very impressive on Saturday against Offaly. Like, I mean, Derry won that division and the final with an average winning margin of 10 points. It's fair to say Derry were too good for that division. And my opinion anyways, they're, at the moment, they're a Division 2 team. I wouldn't probably see them going up into Division 1.
No, just like that was the first time I'd seen Derry for a full game in the league. And yeah, like they were way too strong. They were obviously way too strong for Offaly. And I was just thinking about that, like I don't necessarily think they're any better than Division 2 at the moment. But I was just thinking, Willie, that like it's probably about time that Derry are here. Do you know what I mean? Like we tend to forget that like Derry should never have been anywhere near Division 4 in the first place. So yeah. Derry, their tradition and given the, you know, the what we're used to with Derry, their history and the quality of club football in the county, they should be at least aiming towards Division 2. But that game on Saturday, like I think John Mahan said afterwards that he had no regrets, but I don't know what he'd think the same after the game, because Derry were just, they were just at a canter for the entire game. I mean, apart from the goal just before halftime, they were at their ease and they were impressive, but I thought they should have annihilated Offaly. I thought they should have probably won by more than 12 points. They were that much better than them. And there was just a gulf. It looked like a Division 2 team playing against a Division 3 team, to be honest.
No, it definitely did. And like, I mean, Offaly got that goal before halftime. They didn't deserve to be going in four down. And then they got, Niall McNamee got a mark at the second half. And you're kind of like going, the majority of the support was from Offaly and they're just dying to get behind their team. And they gave them nothing. Offaly didn't really to give them to shout about. They didn't build on it. Like, I mean, Rory Gallagher was talking about expectations after the game. He says, we want to be one of the top teams in Ulster and in the country. I expect us to be a wee bit better than we are. That's a sign of the potential of the team. But we had to prove that we're good enough to get out of Division 3. And they spoke about the pressure on the Limerick game and they had a little bit, you know, the pressure was off them. But you're right, there was a gulf in class. And Offaly, on the evidence of Saturday night, Offaly will struggle in Division 2. But then Offaly are probably better than that. They were very nervous. Even the telltale sign of nerves is when like good ball goes into your full forward line, it's just bouncing off Cian Farrell's chest and Bernard Allen is fumbling it and injuring himself in the process. Like, I mean, I suppose playing in front of a crowd in Croke Park for both teams, we even saw Shane McGuigan, you know, not having his best ever game. You know, there's probably a lot of nerves out there.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, you said a couple of telltale signs that you noticed there, Willie. Another one that I noticed that, like, I thought, you know, Derry were quite content to let Offaly up as far as the 45 and then to maybe swarm them when they got there. But Offaly were really treating the ball a bit like a hot potato at times, just very anxious to get rid of it, probably very hurried in decision-making, taking the wrong option. And then, you know, like after 20 minutes, I had they registered a point after 20 minutes or something like that, you know what I mean? And, like, it's not as if excuse. It was a lovely day. Croke Park was looking as good as, you know, you'll ever see it. They, as you said, they probably had the majority of the, albeit small, crowd in there. But what really annoyed or what really disappointed me, Willie, was their lack of kind of their lack of in intensity as well. Like, no more than Derry were happy to allow Offaly to their 45. Offaly did the same thing. But when Derry got there, there was no intensity in the tackle. And like for the amount of bodies that Offaly had back, you know, the likes of Gareth McInlis was able to wander up at his ease, Conor Glass as well. And a lot of the scores Derry got, were under very little pressure. And it wasn't as if the bodies weren't around. It was kind of a lack of intensity there. So it's very, I hope this doesn't have a real kind of detrimental impact on Offaly's season, because obviously they've been very good to this point. But there was, I was expecting a lot better of them. And like, you know, championship isn't far away. So hopefully it'll be a case of immediately bouncing back, as opposed to, you know, it having a kind of longer term impact.
Yeah, I think they were spooked by Shane McGuigan. They were probably playing a little bit more defensively than they usually would. I wouldn't blame them for being worried about Shane McGuigan. The sideline at the start of the game was absolutely sensational. Like, I mean, it's not often you see a sideline like that from the inside of the boot. We saw Conor Cleary from Clare do one off the outside of the boot, and I could make a fist at going off the outside of the boot and maybe get 1 out of 10. I would never be able to do it off the inside of the boot. How to get the distance and the curl. The technique is just off the charts to be able to do something like that. And that's why we don't see it off the inside of the boot that often from that tight angle, because it's so hard to do.
Yeah, there was an unbelievable angle of it as well from just somebody that just was in the same line as Shane McGuigan. So you got the exact, you know, you got from right behind him, and trajectory was just perfect. And the most impressive thing about that is, you know, you say you can do it off the outside of the boot because you get to hit the outside. You have to actually ping an outside of the boot, you know what I mean? So like it's easier to kind of just have a good rattle of it, whereas there has to be a bit more of a caress to, you know, when you're curled over the bar. And you have to delay the curl, if that makes any sense. The curl can't come until the last minute, as it did with Shane McGuigan's. It just landed. You know, there's such a kind of an aesthetic quality to scores that land on the top of the net. Do you know what I mean? And Shane McGuigan's was perfect. But it didn't quite go as well for him after that. But that was, as you said, that was a sign of what he can do, and probably why Offaly were that bit nervous and set up a little bit more defensively than they had been to date.
Yeah, so there was a great bit of drama then at the end where Paddy Dunnigan was sent off with a black card, and Peter Cunningham, centre forward, had to go in, turn his jersey inside out. Now, the only thing about this was fantastic drama. I'd lost interest in the game at this stage, if I'm being honest, because, you know, it was so one-sided. But if the game was close and this was all happening, and then he did the, you know, the grobbler dance either side to put Shane off, and Shane ended up going down the middle, and he a big dramatic save with his foot where he almost jumped back into the net before he stuck his foot out.
It was really bizarre all around, because you had Paddy Dunnigan, who was probably wrecked. He just ran nearly the length of the pitch and had to go for a point that just fell short. So he's gone back to pitch. I think Jack Doherty was bearing down, and like, I don't know, like Jack Doherty was round him, and it was the most blatant then hand trip you'll ever see. Then he had to go off. But what was funny about that, like, no offense to Shane McGuigan, it was a very poor penalty. And then he was kind of laughing, nearly like a rueful smile afterwards, thinking that, like, since the sideline hasn't really had a couple of goal chances, nothing was really going for him. But Peter Cunningham had such a frown on his face, because probably thinking inside, geez, you know, I've just gone in goals in Croke Park and saved a penalty. But at the same time, we've just been absolutely hammered out the gate, so I can hardly smile or start celebrating or anything like that. But the game needed any sort of, you know, drama or intervention at that stage, because since the... I think Offaly's last score before that had come from, you know, 20 minutes or so before then. You know, it was just, the game was petering out. It had been petering out since 5 minutes after half time. So
yeah,
was any bit of welcome drama, or any bit of drama was welcome at that stage.
Yeah, no, it definitely was. So I was lucky enough that I caught up with Shane McGuigan earlier on the phone, and I started off by asking him if he expected Peter to dive.
I did. I seen him moving on the line. And it kind of put me off, like he was doing the, I don't know, the grobbler or whatever it was, he's up to that there type of stuff. But yeah, it put me off, and I would usually go to my left hand side, like, so he got under my head, and then I just thought I would go down the middle. I thought he was going to dive, but he stood firm, and fair play to him.
Yeah, and was it just at the last minute you changed your mind?
Just last minute, I changed my mind. That's something that you're always told never to do, like, so. and the next time, I'll try not to be psyched out like that.
Yeah, because he was doing the dancing around on the line. He was into a bit of gamesmanship. To be fair, there was nothing riding on it at that stage, Shane. Like, the game was well over at that stage, but it was a nice bit of drama to finish it off with.
But the game was over. That's maybe one thing that's putting a bit of these off my mind, like, but the game was, well, it was over by that stage, but it was good bit of drama. Like, you heard the Offaly support when the ball was saved, like, so it was just it added to the whole day, like, so fair play to him.
It kind of summed up your day missing that, Shane, would it be fair to say? You scored that unbelievable sideline at the start of the game, and I was thinking, geez, this could really be, you know, he could kick him off here. But by the end of the second half, you looked very frustrated. But even when you scored the point, you weren't even happy with that. You were just like, finally.
Definitely. Look, I wasn't my best day. I should have been walking away with 2-10 at least, like, but... I know, and later in the championship, I'll have to be slotting the chances over. Like, they were dropping men deep, doubling up on myself and all their forwards. Like, so And no matter who we play, Down or Donegal in the championship, I'm sure it'll be quite similar. So it's frustration was probably the main thing that springs to mind with Saturday's performance anyway.
Yeah, you probably weren't expecting that from Offaly because they wouldn't have been known for dropping too many players back.
No, we done our video analysis on them, like, and we seen that they were an attacking side. Like Rory knows the manager and knew Offaly pretty well, like, so we weren't really expecting that from them. So they were obviously trying to curtail us for so long, but thankfully our runners from deep then had started to cause them the problems, like, what stood for us. You've seen the likes of Brad McInnes and the boys coming through at pace, like, that was where we were getting our most joy on Saturday. So it's good that we have that aspect of our game as well.
Well, yeah, you can mix it up because I saw you playing against Cavan and you would have got a lot more kind of good diagonal ball in, you know, that you probably love. And that wasn't really on Saturday. So you just ran everything and just won a different way.
Yeah, exactly. Like Rory says, we need to be more, use our brains more when we are attacking. We need to understand the situation that's ahead of us, like when to run the ball, when to kick the ball. So he is trying to bring different aspects into our game. Like, and I think we're slowly but surely trying to we're getting there. Still a lot of work and improvements to be made on it, like, but steady progress definitely.
Well, it definitely, like, it's all about, I suppose, Shane, having variety, and like that kicking game isn't going to be on every time to be equally as comfortable. I think that's what sets Dublin apart even from the likes of Kerry, where Kerry predominantly like to kick it. They don't really like that running game, you know, but it's about being really comfortable with both.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Like you could sit and watch Dublin to every day, like, and they would come up with something different, like, but you have to keep the opposition honest. Like you can become, like you say, you can become predictable with your attacks, and that's one thing Dublin have in their locker. You don't know, they put on the long ball and they can't fit to win it, and then they've got the runners too, like, so you have to keep the opposition honest and not let them be so prepared for what you're going to be doing on the day. Like, you have to keep them honest.
Yeah, see, like, I mean, you've been very impressive. Like, to be fair, Shane, you're not a Division 3 team. I think the average winning margin has been 10 points. So now you're up probably, you know, at a level that's more comfortable with for the team you have, you know, to be, you know, knocking on the door of the top of Division 2.
Yeah. Look, Derry, where we were because we deserved to be there. The players in the past, including myself, we weren't committing to each other. But Rory has stepped in and he's brought in a few new faces. We, as a group, believed we were, no disrespect to the teams in Division 3 and 4, we did believe we should have been getting out of it. But like you say, Division 2 will be a step up for this team. This we're not going to be winning all earnings and all unsaved in the next 6 months, I don't believe. But like you say, the steady progress that you may make, and hopefully I think the main thing for next year will be staying in Division 2 and then building from that. But Ulster's and all earnings, hopefully in the near future, will be something that we can be building towards.
Yeah, Rory's definitely made a very positive impact, hasn't he? Like, I mean, it's all positive coming out of Derry. Everybody's committing. You know, you don't have the same, oh, they don't have him, they don't have him. It all seems to be, you know, moving forward in a very positive manner.
Definitely. Look, Rory's come from his CV speaks for itself. Like, he's been in an All-Ireland winning management team with Donegal, like, so I think players in the past have maybe used the excuses of having poor management setups or this and that, like, but one thing that you can't question is Rory's ability and understanding of the game. Like, he knows himself. He'll be the first one to say he's maybe got things wrong in the past, like, and the way he's set teams up in the past, he knows himself now won't be good enough to be challenging the top teams. So he's constantly learning and ourselves.
Right, okay, because that's definitely been noticeable about Derry. Whatever happened to Rory, maybe over the Christmas, he's seen the light anyways, because it's definitely different football than we would be used to from Rory Gallagher teams.
Definitely, look, like you say, he's mad about football and he's mad about watching it, and it's in his head 24/7, like, and he knows, he says himself, like, the defensive structures, and it was good enough for the times when players didn't have the capabilities to break it down or the game plans to break it down. But
yeah,
the game has moved on from that. You look at Dublin, they'll pick you apart. Like if you constantly set up with the defensive structure, obviously you still need to have a good. You need to find the right balance, as they say. Like, so I think we are bringing that into our game, it's worked for us so far. Like I said, I keep coming back to you, we have a lot of improvements to be making, but I'm happy with how it's going. Yeah.
Yeah, and like I said earlier, that everybody seems to be committing. And, like, I mean, you always hear this from Derry. I'd be interested to see what you think of it. You know, Derry underachieve because they hate each other at club level and they can't, you know, get out. They can't leave that at the dressing room door when they go in with the county. Where's this come from, or is this still the case?
I don't know where this has come from. Look, you go out in the club match and you play for your club and you play with your heart in your sleeve, like, no question about it. Like, but as soon as we get the boys up around one big, like, we're there for each other. Like, maybe in the past it's something that has maybe crept in. I don't think it's ever been as serious as a thing as people talked about. Or they don't be playing for each other. All the Slat Neil boys are playing with the Slat Neil boys, the Glen boys are playing with the Glen boys. I don't think it's ever been as serious as that there. Like, but Rory did, he came in and he demanded that we need to be more as one. We need to be living and breathing with each other. Like, so we have committed to each other better, definitely, but I don't think it's ever been as serious as this thing as people's made out to be.
Right, okay. I don't know where these things come from. But the few tweaks that Rory's made to the team this year have really worked. Like McInnes, he's a real weapon at centre-back. He's a throwback to Kevin Moran in the 80s with Dublin, bombing forward. And, you know, Chrissy McCaig on the full back line, brilliant man marker. You know, you're very safe with him there. And then you've Glass and Bradley in midfield, which is really, really strong. You know, you've a very good balance to the team now.
Yeah, I think the main thing from this year compared to last year has probably been Gareth. Gareth coming out at centre half back, he's been look, nobody ever doubted Gareth's footballing ability. In the past, maybe his commitments were travelling. He liked his travelling and stuff like that, like, which is fair to him. Like, but nobody ever really doubted his footballing abilities, and he came in at the start of the year and he said he was going to be committed to the project that Rory had in place. Like, so I think the team were more than happy to get him on board when he said he would commit. Like you said, Chrissy stationed at full back brings a bit more steadiness to the ship. Like, we were a bit more erratic in the past in the full back line, and I think Chrissy's presence there, not even defensively, but having that cool head coming out with the ball is helping us. And then you've got the two men midfield, like you said, Connor and Emmett. Connor is obviously another one that's brought in. He was three into the deep end maybe last year against Armagh, like, but Rory said Connor will be playing midfield for the next 10 years for Derry, like, so he's just gonna have to get used to it. And I think Connor will say it was maybe a baptism of fire, but it's probably stood to him now.
Yeah, you can see he's the football side of things has improved. Come here, you must have been delighted with that sideline into Hill 16. You were running away very confidently, but it only scraped over the bar onto the top of the net.
Well, I think I'm glad Ed's maybe making a bit more headlines than the penalty, but I just can't get the I just can't get the penalty out of my head. So look, I was a good strike. I felt it clean coming off the foot lift, but I still can't get the penalty out of my head. So I'll not be getting carried away with the point.
Yeah, well, that's true. Well, you have an incredible control over a football off your left foot. There's no doubt about that. I was impressed in the Cavan game with your right foot. You've been doing a good bit of work on that. You kicked two pretty natural looking right footed points that day. But like, I mean, that's not natural for you at all.
No, definitely not. Look, I think in underage, they're always saying push him to his right, push him to his right, or he's all left, he's all left. So even first couple of years as senior, like, I was still dependent on it too much, but Gavin Devlin came in last year into the club scene and was hammered and into me, being able to work off both sides, and it was the same with Rory. So they were saying, if you want to be the elite forward that you maybe can be, this is something that you have to do. I think Clifford and the likes have set the bar with both feet legs, so it's something that is definitely I've tried to bring into my game, and it's worked so far, so I'm happy with how it's going.
Well, that's the thing. Would you believe they used to shout at Clifford as well? I interviewed him on the show to keep him on his, push him onto his right. He doesn't have a right, which sounds a bit weird now. It's funny though, Shane, because I never had a left foot. It's funny how fast you can get good at it if you actually just try to focus on it.
Yeah, it's nothing too, you thought maybe it was something harder than it was, like, but it's more simple than it was. Like, even last year in lockdown, you'd had plenty of time on my hands, like, and that really got it into the motion of kicking. Like, I was just up against the wall off the right foot every day, basically, with the time I had on my hands. And it really just, it came naturally enough when you got the swing of it. Like, it's not too different, like, so. That would be the tip for the youngsters, just to get out at a young age and don't leave it to 19 or 20 like the guy did.
I think I was 24 before the penny dropped with me when I was moved up into the forwards. Come here, before I let you go here, I can't get my head around the fact that you're an elite top level full forward in Gaelic football, but you move across to hurling because you obviously played Jewel for Slocknail, maybe not for, obviously Derry is too difficult at intercounty level, and you're a man marker. How the hell did you get stuck being a man marker in hurling when you're the man scoring the points in the football?
I don't know how that came about. It was around underage. I was played nearly everywhere, like, but then stepped into senior, like, and we were just down a man, and that was Mickey McShane just saw me as a defender or senior hurling coach, like, so I was watching, like, Brenton Rogers would be the opposite of that there. He would be the full back in the county, but then when you see him in the hurling pitch, he's magic, like, so I just don't think I've got the hurling skills, more of a spoiler or something they got there, as they would say, and the hurling, like, I would get a few taunts about it from the lads, but it's more about the football skills would be a bit more refined than the hurling.
Right, okay, so you're a tagger in the hurling. You marked TJ Reid very well anyways in that All-Ireland semi-final.
Yeah.
Come here, you're in your last week as a teacher and then you're a professional footballer for the rest of the summer. So, like, I mean, obviously it's knockout this year. So, you know, you've got Downer Donegal, which is a huge, huge game. You'll want it to last a little bit longer than one game.
Yeah, definitely. We'll get a good look at both teams on, like, a Sunday now, isn't it? Like you say, hopefully it will be a long summer. We've got plenty of time on our hands, but It's been 5 years now, I think, since Derry's won an Ulster Championship match. So
Jesus.
We'll be, I know, like when you say it like that there, it's not good. It's not good, like, so we want to be righting that wrong anyway. It's been too long since an Ulster Championship won. I think it was down in 15. So yeah, that there's something that we will be looking to correct.
Yeah, exactly. Well, listen, Kamir, best of luck in the championship anyway, and congratulations on the performances in the league. We'll talk to you again maybe during the summer, Shane.
That's dead on. Thanks a million, Colm.
Yeah, isn't it mad, all right, Conor, when you hear Shane talking about Derry not having had won an Ulster championship match in 5 years? It's a long bloody time. And to be honest, I don't want to be insensitive to them. They might not this year either.
No, just judging by their path through Ulster, it looks like it. Like I'd have more hope for them off the basis of that performance at the weekend. But
yeah,
their path through Ulster looks quite perilous. But there's no more, like, Armagh had that horrible record in Ulster Championship for a long time as well. Derry the same. But like I remember during that time, Derry should have probably knocked Mayo out in Castlebar the year that we got to the I think it was the 17 final against Dublin. So they've had some memorable enough performances in the qualifiers, but I suppose when you're in Ulster, you live and die by your performance in the championship. And as I kind of mentioned earlier, I saw a county with all Derry's tradition to not win a championship game in 5 years. That's bad going. That must be something that weighs quite heavily on them as well.
Yeah, no, it definitely is. Like Rory Gallagher was talking after the game, and he's saying that he said, "I want to be going into the championship with 12, 13, 14 of my team crystal clear. People going to the matches should be almost able to pick the team. You don't want to hide who the best players are." And like, I mean, that makes a lot of sense. And that's some mistakes some managers kind of make at the end of the league. They've tried so many different things. You have to find a balance between rotating your panel, but knowing your best team. And he does know his best team. Like, he's a little bit like Jack O'Connor, where he's pretty much playing his best team most of the time. For me to take the step up to Division 1, they need a better number 13 and a better number 15. Like, there's just not enough danger from Oisin Williams or Benny Herron, as far as I would be concerned, to be able to move up to that next level. So unless they have one or two of them, across the rest of their team, you know, that's even without Brendan Rodgers at full back. Their full back line's solid. McInnes is outstanding centre back. Like, I mean, he reminds me a little bit of Oisin Mullen. He only knows one. That is a full on sprint straight down the middle of the pitch. Like, it's exciting to watch McInnes. Your two wing backs aren't bad. Their midfield's really, really strong. Working wing forwards who can kick a bit of football as well. Niall Loughlin and Shane McGuigan's, obviously, they'd be the class up front, but they need to help Shane out when he's not having when he might be having an off day.
Yeah, and that would have been my one thing with Derry on Saturday, is that like they did create far, like they scored 21 points, but they created far more. They created enough chances to score 30 points and a couple of goals on top of that as well, and there just wasn't enough clinical finishing, and like teams, and especially in teams in the Ulster Championship, aren't going to give them the space that Offaly gave them, despite having the bodies back there the last day. So you would have a concern about that. But outside of that, there's a lot for Rory Gallagher to be happy about. Like, that's, you meant the spine of the team. The spine of the team is very strong. You know, with Chris McKay back there with Garrett McInnes, and with the midfield, who I was very, very impressed by, Conor Glass and Emma Bradley the last day. And just that, like, that McInnes was the embodiment of it, as you said, just like Oisin Mullen. But like, The wing backs have the ability to do that. Chrissy McKay didn't have to do it, but he has the ability to do that, to run from deep as well. So they have that weapon too. But yeah, it's just that would be a real kind of cause of concern, that like the teams outside of Offaly, that they can really probably focus on Shane McGuigan and Niall Loughlin, because the contributions from the lads outside, you know, maybe aren't what they need to be, as you said, especially at 13 and 15.
Yeah, Conor Glass, you're right to mention him. Rory Gallagher was talking about him after the match, and he says he'd one training session under him when he came on against Longford. That's last year. I think since then he's improved and improved. He's very humble. He puts the team first. There's a lot of skills in Gaelic football, but your ability to play for the team and his willingness to do that is exceptional. Do you know who I kind of compare Conor Glass to? A little bit of an Aidan O'Shea type midfielder. Very, very committed, an excellent tackler, kind of box to box. Isn't going to get you 4 or 5 points. You know, that's not his game, but it's just an all round big physical lump of a presence in midfield that every team probably would love to have.
Yeah, and when you mention O'Shea, that kind of intimidatory factor that he has, when, you know, people hate it. People don't take Aidan O'Shea on because he's one of the best tacklers in the game. Do you know what I mean? He forces turnovers, forces many of them, you know, every game. So that will get into players' heads, and they won't probably take him on because of it. And the one thing that stood out to me about Conor Glass the last day was just, well, I thought, we mentioned Division 2 against Division 3, and I thought, well, in terms of quality, but the physicality of Derry compared to the physicality of Offaly, I thought it stood out an awful lot. And that was embodied by I thought, Emmett Bradley and Conor Glass particularly. And it just, not only his physicality, he's very good in the air as well. He's not going to get you 4 points, but he did wander forward and kick a good score as well. He does have it in him. He probably should have got a goal in the first half as well. But this must be such a bonus for Derry. I mean, there's probably unrealistic expectations of what he might do last year coming back from Australia. And you're looking at the impact that Conor McKenna had immediately upon his return. But now that he's settled in, now that Conor Glass has settled in, got a good kind of season under him with Rory Gallagher and with a team that's playing well as well, he could be a massive weapon for Derry in the championship.
You mentioned John Mahan said after the game they had no regrets. And, like, I mean, I don't know. It was just a very, very flat performance. But, you know, I just don't think Offaly would ever be able to beat Derry. You know, Niall McNamee coming on. I think Cian Farrell has potential in there, as a good bit of movement. And, like, Chrissy McCaig's not an easy man to mark. And he got plenty of ball off Chrissy. He just couldn't hold on to it, again, because of nerves, I'd say. And then Chrissy went on Niall McNamee when he came on then. And like, I'd leave Niall McNamee and Farrell in there, maybe in a two-man full forward line, and kind of get it into them. Like, Offaly only scored 1 point from play. I was thinking this is a big advantage from Mickey Hart watching this game. And I'd say Mickey Hart will have learned nothing about Offaly from this game.
Very little. Well, he would have known, for example, that when Niall McNamee, to me, like, Offaly didn't do a whole lot, but Niall McNamee was at the heart of everything that they did do, including his role in the goal. Just, you know, did really well to take that and kind of set it up. So if he's, I suppose in terms of thinking of men to mark, that's if Niall McNamee is going to start, he'll have his focus there. But I'd say what Mickey Hart will have taken kind of heart from, and I think that John Mahan alluded to this himself after the game, was that Loud have a lot of, Loud have some physical players as well. I think Mahan might have referenced Grimes and Kieran Byrne, who played in the AFL as well. So, like, that was the big thing that stood out to me, that Offaly suffered quite, you know, physically. They just weren't up to it against Derry. Now, Derry are a long way removed from, you know, Louder Division 4. Like, Derry should probably be Division 2. So probably mightn't be able to impose themselves physically the way that Derry did. But that's, if I was Mickey Hart, that's something I'd be looking at, and something, an area that Offaly can be got at.
No, the point I'm kind of making is that Offaly were just so far off, you know, so far off the pitch. You don't know, like, you're right, Offaly or Loud aren't going to be as good as Derry. That's still probably a 50-50 game this weekend. I still think Offaly made the right decision for a national final in Croke Park in front of their fans. They're poor fans. Like, they must have had 90% of the people there, and they had nothing to cheer about.
Yeah, no, it was absolutely the right decision to play the game, Willie. I'm just thinking afterwards, like, is John Mann half thinking, oh, maybe, you know, maybe, you know, maybe what he didn't learn as much, or maybe that, you know, the confidence of some of his players is going to be affected because of it. But that's it. You did, like, I think we talked about fans here last week and what it would be like in Croke Park, and kind of after, like, while it was good to have them back, it did, especially because of the nature of the game, it did after a while feel like there's only 2,500 fans here in an 80,000 seater stadium. And the only time they got to really a chance to kind of raise a ripple was when Offaly got the goal before half time, and for a little while after half time. But then it was just really dead and really flat kind of after that. Now, that's like, I keep going on about how Derry kind of imposed themselves physically, and when Offaly kind of realised that, and realised maybe after a while that there's no getting back into it, that kind of played into their heads. But the flatness of the performance, particularly after such an encouraging league campaign for Offaly, and clearly a team on the up, I just, as I said earlier, no better man than John Mahan to kind of rouse them again, but I just hope it doesn't have, you know, a really detrimental impact given everything they've kind of done in the league to date.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. Just before we leave it for this match, I suppose tactically, John Mahan didn't, you know, cover himself in glory by, you know, worrying so much about Shane McGuigan. And if anyone had watched the Cavan match, they would have saw how McInnes is just a machine. And he actually did it two or three times at the start of the Cavan match until he hurt himself and he just stopped doing it then. I remember commenting on it on the review show on the Monday. You know, giving them that their half back line, you know, free rein to be raiding down the field is probably something Mahon might regret himself. You know, like, I mean, that probably has to be said as well. Right, we'll leave it there, Conor, for that match, and we'll come back with some news since the last show. So we were talking about the 2,400 fans there, Conor, and Tony McGuinness. I'd never heard of Tony McGuinness. He's Croke Park head of operations. You know, he was talking about how successful the pilot had been and how they're sending a report into the Department of Health, and there was very little congregating inside or outside the stadium. Jesus Christ, like, I mean, Croke Park, so 2,000 people couldn't possibly congregate outside Croke Park. And even if they do a bit of congregating, is that any different than South William Street or anywhere else? Anyways, or a beer garden, which is now allowed. You know, I'm a little bit surprised as to why they're worried about fans congregating when it's outside and it's not dangerous. And you wonder where their head's at, because this is something that was kind of an issue last year. But I don't think congregating outside, we've been told we should have an outdoor summer. So why are they worried about people congregating outside, Conor?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I'm not sure, Willie, to be honest. Maybe it's they're kind of getting ahead of themselves in terms of, you know, rather than what they're instructed to do by the Department of Health, in terms of that if there is a crowd to congregate outside Croke Park, that they'd see themselves responsible for it. But, you know, when it's permitted and when it's encouraged, that's what we're encouraged to do, I'm not sure what the issue is. And like, just 2,000 in the stadium, I mean, yeah, I mean, 2,000 in 80,000 seater stadium, I'm not surprised it kind of went swimmingly. And, you know, a ground with the size of Croke Park, it has the potential to do far more than that. And I think thankfully we're already seeing proposals that looks like it's going to come back for the Leinster hurling final, maybe, and hopefully for the All-Ireland as well.
Yeah, farcical, really, have that few people in Croke Park. But like you say, RT are saying that they're looking at 10,000 for the Leinster hurling final. That's in mid-July, and they're looking at 25,000 for the All-Ireland finals in August. Again, I think they're conservative numbers, but that's not me. I don't have any input into this. Bernard Flynn has quit the Meath under-20s. This is very disappointing, because he'd assembled a brilliant backroom team of Robbie Brennan, Graham Geraghty, Graham Riley, Peter Leahy and Shane Supple. Like, for an under-20 team, he's pissed off. Like, I'm sure Bernard wanted his under-20s last weekend, the weekend just gone, and he was told he wouldn't have them because the Meath seniors are out on July the 4th, which is 2 weeks away. The under-20s are out on the 8th, which is just 4 days after the seniors. So Bernard will literally not have his senior players. If he didn't have them last weekend, just gone, you know, he's not going to have them until maybe the Monday night after the play with the seniors in the championship, you know, and it's probably a Wednesday night that they're out. So I can understand how Bernard would be really pissed off. They had an agreement. He said in a statement, he says, "I undertook to accept the role of managing and developing the Meath under 20 squad based on a verbal and written agreement that the senior players would be released for championship, an issue that has caused difficulties for previous management. Confirmation was received today that this agreement, which is underpinned by a signed charter, including a commitment from, I think that's the chairman and the senior manager, will not be honoured, therefore making the position of the under-20 manager and my backroom team untenable." What do you think of this one? Like, I mean, this is Andy McEntee reneging on a promise.
That's what it looks like to me. My sympathies is entirely with Bernard Flynn, and Andy McEntee wouldn't comment on it.
No,
that seems to me, until he comes out and says something different, that seems to suggest exactly what you said there, that it reneges on an agreement that he made and signed, like a signed charter. It wasn't just a verbal one. Like, we all know the verbal contracts aren't worth the paper they're printed on. But this was Bernard Flynn. Obviously, he mentioned it in his statement. He said, "This has caused an issue in the past. It's not going to cause an issue under me. So I'm going to make sure that I put this in writing and that it's signed by the relevant people, including senior manager and the county chairman." So, like, to all intents and purposes, until we hear otherwise, Willie, this is exactly what has happened. And I just like to know, like, were these, you know, when this charter was drawn up and when the fixtures were released and all this sort of stuff, were these scenarios not envisaged? You'd like to think they were. And then only now, like in the last couple of days, obviously he just retired, he stepped down over the weekend. Suddenly somebody has stepped up and said, "Well, no, actually, this is the way I want it and this is how it's going to happen."
So, yeah, I think this is a situation for a strong chairman should be making the decision on this, because these two managers are obviously want the best for their own team, which is perfectly understandable. McEntee shouldn't be going against a signed promise. There's no doubt about that. This is where the chairman steps in and goes, hang on a second. I've appointed you and I've appointed you. And this is the signed charter. And those two players are going to be released to the under-20s this weekend, and as per the agreement, and take it out of the players' hands and take it out of the manager's hands. And if you don't like that, well, then that's, you know, that's fine. Because now, like, I don't think Bernard Flynn quitting is the right, you know, like, I mean, that was a great backroom team and that was great for Meath. So this is not a good situation. And this is the chairman's fault. Like, he's just let an incredible backroom team walk away instead of him putting his foot down here.
Yeah, and like, we can't speak for it until we know the exact details, Bully, but it seems to me like another example of the senior team kind of being, the county senior team being the be-all and end-all, and kind of, you know, being able to walk over the county board, I suppose. I mean, there's been examples, and a lot of examples in recent years of maybe club fixtures being changed at the drop of a hat to suit, you know, maybe a county training camp or something like that. Or maybe, you know, if a county ends up in the qualifiers when they didn't expect to be, and like all of a sudden everything, you know, everything is put to rest at the behest of the county team. So it's just like, my sympathy here, we probably haven't mentioned them yet, are the players. I mean, like, they're out on the 8th of July, only a couple of weeks away. If they win that again, they're out on the 15th. Which is only a week later. And this is a Meath team, to the best of my knowledge, that they would have a lot of players that won an under 17.
They won the minor 3 years ago, I think.
Yeah, yeah. So they like, providing that their development has been quite good up till now, that they should be in a decent position to have a stab at Leinster. So now they're looking at a situation of not having a management team in place for their game, which is only a few weeks away. So like, it's a complete mess. If Bernard Flynn, as he said, did, you know, sign that charter and said that his position would be untenable if this charter was breached, well, then you just have to have, you know, you have to have respect with Bernard and the management team for kind of standing by their principles.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Bad news in Cork. So Kieran Sheehan has been forced to retire. She has terrible news now. He said, my knee had got to the point where competing at intercounty level intensity is no longer an option, as the long-term health of the knee is at high risk if I continue to play at that level. I'm just thinking of my own knee, which is banjaxed, and I stupidly played in Junior B last weekend when I should be gone off it long ago. But this is terrible news for Kieran Sheehan. And like, the poor chap just has had a career. He's had a brilliant career. He's won more than 90% of players could only dream of. And he's been a professional athlete in Australia. But Jesus, when he looks back on it, you know, injury has really hampered him. He had 8 operations in 4 years when he was in Australia. And since he's come back then, he's been back getting injured again. And I'm sure he's just got to the point where he can't be dealing with it anymore. He was on the show here a couple of years ago after he came back from Australia. And here he is filling us in on all the horrible injuries he had in Australia.
I did run into a bit of misfortune right from the injury side of things. Eight operations in my 4 years on a list, and look, if you're trying to balance that, it's always going to be tough. But I think the key there, like, it would look like there's actually there who's had, you know, he's been so consistent with injuries and stuff. Yeah. You know, he hasn't got any injuries. He's been on the ground every week, and you know, that's the real key to being successful, I think, from an Irish point of view, actually from all players' point of view when they're playing AFL, is just that consistency of performance. And being out in the track training, and Zach's proven that. And look, I suppose when I look back at my own career, I suppose like I had a lot of regrets too, in terms of how I managed it. And yeah, so look, I had a couple of injuries. I'm not going to be around the bush that held me back. But at the same time, I had opportunities that I probably didn't take as well. I suppose we had 3 coaches in the space of 4 years as well, which is unheard of for an AFL team. There was a lot of change going on. There was a change in culture nearly every year. The most previous manager I had was Brendan Bolton. Like, we didn't exactly have the greatest relationship either. You know, so it was just a series of a few different events. I look back and say, look, it was an amazing experience in terms of the career itself. Look, it was a disappointment from what I wanted to achieve. But look, it was, as I said, it was a massive experience from a personal point of view, which has kind of I suppose, added to my own character from that sense. And I'm really happy. I have no regrets of the decision I made. Maybe a few regrets on the performance side of things.
Right. So, like, I mean, just to give people an idea of, you know, the injuries that you had. So, like, I mean, you played 14 games VFL in your first year, and then you played your first AFL game. Was it at the end of that season as well? You were over at the end of 13, and then in 14 you made the breakthrough. Then in 15 you started getting a pain in your pubic bone. You ended up having to get both hips, surgery done in both hips. Then you came back in 2016 and you got a stress fracture in your foot. And then you had to go back in for more surgery on one of your hips, and that kept you out of 2016. You came back and you did your knee, you did your lateral ligament, and you ruptured your hamstring tendon off the bone.
Yeah.
Holy shit. Yep. Like, I mean, Christ, I'd be gone home long ago if I was you, Kieran. Like, I mean, And then you've
your homework done there, yeah.
And then, like, I mean, you come back in 2017. And it was like something like, you were saying it was 8 operations over four years.
Yeah. It was, look, 2017 was probably my best year. That was my last year. And I had an injury, uninterrupted pre-season in terms of injury, and got a good run and ended up playing a couple of games towards the back end of the year. But my body was in a great position at the end of 2017. And look, I wanted to continue playing at kind of a high level there as well. And I played, a semi-pro level over as well for that 2 years that I was working with the AFL Players Association.
All right.
So, look, I kept the body in kind of in good shape, you know, when it came to that. And I always kind of thought that, you know, if there was a sniff of a chance of playing with Cork again, that, you know, I'd have to keep myself in some bit of shape. So that was kind of a part of it as well. But look, as you said there, there is a list of injuries there. But you grow as a person off the back of, you know, injuries. And yeah, I went through, you know, some dark times. You know, everyone knows the drill there when you're injured, like being in a rehab room on your own, you know, wondering, you know, what am I doing here? But I suppose the biggest thing that I kind of look back on and the advice I give is just always ask yourself the question, why, you know, why am I here? Why am I doing it? And look, I always had the answer that kind of drove me. And that's what kept me going, really, you know.
Very positive attitude, hasn't he, Conor? That was back then, and I'm sure he is the same. You know, you grow as a person after having these injuries. He kind of tries to turn them into a positive, and maybe that's the only thing he can do at this stage.
Yeah, well, it's fair play to him for having that attitude, especially after getting the news that he got. Do you know what I mean? And like, it's not just, you know, it's having to retire is one thing, but being told that your long-term health of your knee is at high risk, that's just kind of, it's nearly the cherry on top in terms of the bad news. But like, he has, at least in fairness to Kieran, he has experience from what he did in the AFL in terms of managing the transition from, you know, a playing career to a post-playing career. And I was glad to hear as well that he will be able to keep playing with Aeroge, I think. And Aeroge got promoted in Cork there at the weekend as well. So something for him to look forward to in that point of view. But well, just the most rotten run of luck. And you said he has had a brilliant career, but he won his All-Ireland at 19, and probably thinking after that like, oh, geez, it can only go up and up for me from here. And then it's just injury after injury after injury. And like, I was even surprised to hear that he's only 30. You know, because he won that All-Ireland as far back as 2010, 11 years ago. But what a player he was. I think Ronan McCarthy called him a Rolls Royce of a footballer, which is the highest compliment that I think you can pay him. But it's a pity that both in Australia and in Cork that they just probably didn't see the best of him since then, because he's just had the most rotten run of luck.
Yeah, no, he definitely had. Come here, have you seen this Conor Mortimer on Twitter? He's given out about club players in Kildare having to pay into matches. Now, he's manager of Monster Evan, Mort is, and, you know, obviously had to pay into games. This is unusual for him. So he was asking everybody from different counties, is this the done thing in every county? And it looks like it's only Kildare asked their players to do this. You know, like, I mean, I don't think it's right to ask a player to pay into a match that he's playing in. Like, I mean, you're going to make money on the gate because these players are going into play. I don't think it's right to actually charge these players. They do it in America, of course. I've played out there enough years to know that you pay your own way into whatever Gaelic park there is out there. But I don't know. It's not the situation ever have to do something like that in Mayo, is it?
No. Had you heard about this before, Woody?
No.
As a matter of interest, because I had literally never heard this before. And then, like, I was just, I think it was Saturday night he posted, and I was kind of going through the replies, and like Kildare people were like, yeah, just is this is kind of par for the course here, while every people from the other 31 counties are giving out and couldn't believe it. I mean, it's probably only a few quid, but like it's just the principle, as you said, the players that are providing the entertainment, you know, that the surely whatever costs is accrued is covered by the people that are going to be paying into the game. So why should players have to pay on top of it? Surely that, like, whatever membership you pay at the start of the year should be enough to cover whatever costs are going to accrue as a result of it. I mean, I was just completely taken aback, Willie, because the thought of players having to pay into their to play the game themselves never even occurred to me, and I never even realized that this was the case in Kildare, and seems to have been for a while as well.
How much is membership for Kilshima?
I hope I'm not, you know, kind of putting us out there against other clubs and comparing value or price around like that. But we have to pay. So we have a really, really good gym in our clubhouse.
How much is it?
100 quid.
I nearly had a heart attack here because I didn't want to go up and play the junior in case, because I hadn't paid the membership. 130 euros. Now, you're included in a county board draw. Jesus, I remember the last time I paid Portlaoise membership, it was 50 quid or something.
Yeah, so we get gym membership, we get included in we get a county board draw ticket, and it's a lower price for students then as well, of course. Yeah, but that seems, just talking to friends of mine in other clubs, that seems to be fairly standard in Mayo, only 100 quid.
Right. And then I was out giving out to the father about the 130 quid, and I says, look, well, at least I'm in that county board draw. And he says, that's over, I'm pretty sure. I'm pretty sure.
I don't know about Leash Woolley, but I think there's a guy, a Kilshima club man, I think won as much as 10 grand in the Mayo County Board draw this year. So,
The draw softens the blow, as long as the draw is not over you. We need to get in early in the year to make sure that you're not being as stupid as me. Peter Keane has been, I think he did a media day online ahead of the Clare game, and he's been talking about wanting the seven subs to stay. I don't think that's going to stay for the championship. There's been no talk about it. It was just brought in because of the you know, the intense schedule they had during the league, and it was a very smart thing for the GAA to do. He says, I think the GAA did a great move for the league when they went to seven substitutes. I would certainly think they would need to go there for the championship and go back to seven substitutes, purely from a player welfare point of view. Being able to hook other fellas and get fellas out, because if you look at it, it seems to be soft tissue injuries and muscle injuries that are predominantly the issue here. I would have no problem with the seven substitutes this year for the championship again, Connor, considering the injury list some counties have. Like, isn't it incredible? Kerry have no injury issues. Like, Dublin don't either, because I think Dean Rock is back. Isn't that mad then, when you look at Donegal, you look at Kildare, you know, you look at other counties and they're getting a really bad doing with them.
Yeah, John Small for Dublin, maybe, I think, was the only one.
Small with the hammer, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that's the only one that I can think of. But like, I don't mean to speak down other counties, but I'd say that the quality of Dublin and Kerry's conditioning has something to do with that.
Do you think so?
A little bit, yeah. Well, I mean, at that, like, some we mentioned last week when we were talking about the Kildare case, that some of them are, you know, some of them are freak. You know, some of them are going to happen anyway. But I'd say there's some cases where maybe, and I get a conditioning expert on to, you know, speak about whether they have been managing their loads properly and stuff like that. But I, at the same time, I'm not sure it's an exact coincidence that the two best teams in the country are having the fewest injuries as well. And maybe that's to do with how they've been able to kind of manage their squads and stuff like that throughout the league. But I would suggest that maybe that has something to do with it too.
Yeah, maybe it has.
I don't have an issue with the seven subs. I think I mentioned before the championship that I might have had an issue with it, because it did seem like a lot to me. But any of the games I've seen, it hasn't. The one concern I'd have would be that it would disrupt the flow, and it hasn't disrupted the flow of any game that I've seen. I mean, managers aren't taking the piss with it, basically. So, you know, it's been fine. And if it's going to add that extra layer of protecting people in terms of conditioning injuries, you know, I think it's fine. The only time I saw it was when Meade actually put in their sub keeper for 10 minutes against Mayo. But that was practically a challenge game that didn't really matter anyway. And that's the only time I've seen that, you know, when I'm thinking, oh, maybe seven subs is enough. So especially this season, especially all the injuries that there has been to date, you know, why not leave it at seven for the championship?
So last story to finish up, Conor, we had Colm O'Rourke's article in The Independent yesterday, and look, it was nothing special. It was kind of a generic kind of filler kind of article before the championship kind of starts, like an overview of different things. But he said quite a few Kerry people have been upset at me for taking this line, especially when I said recently that as far as inside forwards are concerned, Conor Callaghan is better than David Clifford. This appears to have been the ultimate insult. However, I have a very simple way of judging players and teams. Until this Kerry team beat Dublin in an All-Ireland final, then I will have a question mark over them. You judge the best against the best. Now there's only one winner in that regard. So I don't know what O'Rourke's talking about here, right? Because I was going to try and stay away from this Con versus Clifford thing. Like, I mean, for me, there is no comparison between Conor Callaghan and David Clifford. David Clifford is a 10 out of 10. Conor Callaghan is a couple of drops down below that. Now, Conor Callaghan is obviously a brilliant, brilliant player. But he's not in Clifford's league as far as I'm concerned. So I don't even think that this is even a debate. Even this, I think 9 people out of 10 that are not from Dublin or Kerry will say David Clifford is better than Con. Now, having said that, Ger Brennan told me before one of the shows he would take Con. Most of this came after the Dublin versus Kerry game when Con got the two goals and got taken down for the penalty and stuff. I don't know, like, Con doesn't do anything near the kind of spectacular things David Clifford does, Conor.
No, I raised a couple of eyebrows there, Willie, when I heard you say that he was a couple of drops below David Clifford. I'd have Conor Callaghan right up there. And so, like, maybe I get what you're saying. He doesn't do the spectacular things that David Clifford can do and is capable of. But, you know, in terms of the impact that he makes, then, Willie, I suppose that's another way. The other way you have to look at it. I mean, if you were to look at the best big game players of the last few years, for example, I think Con is at the very, very top of the list in terms of the impact that he's had in the biggest games. Scored in the 2017 final, scored a goal against Mayo in 2017 final, 2 goals against him in the 2019 semi-final, 4 points against Kerry, I think, in the 2019 final replay, goal again against Mayo last year in the All-Ireland final again. In the biggest games, Con always shows up. Yeah. And he's just such a kind of... he's so hard to manage because he's so strong. He's so direct. In that way, he's a completely different player from David Clifford. But in terms of the impact that they've both had, I think he's right up there. Like I think ultimately, Willie, I think in a couple of years, in a few years, in 10 years, we're going to look back at David Clifford as perhaps the best of all time. As you said, he's a 10 out of 10. There is no weakness that I can see to his game. But in terms of like the impact that they've made, I can maybe see where Colm O'Rourke is coming from. But who do I prefer watching? Who do I think is a better player? I'd probably say Clifford. But I think Con is right up there. And I think in terms of their impact on the game, I think few have made as big an impact as Con in his, 4 or 5 years of the Dublin team so far.
Yeah. Oh, like, Con is up there, but I think Clifford is a way out on his own. And I think Con is with the very, very top level players coming after David Clifford. Like, the question here is, who's a better player, David Clifford or Conor Callaghan? Like, for me there isn't any debate on that. David Clifford is a better player. You know, that goes without saying as far as I'm concerned, because then O'Rourke starts talking about Kerry have to beat Dublin, you know, or I will have question marks over them or over David. Like, I mean, the question is, who's a better player between the two of them? What their teams have won or what their teams haven't won, for me, is irrelevant. And I suppose David Clifford's played in 2 All-Ireland finals. He was outstanding in both games against Dublin. They gave Cooper a terrible doing in the first half and was still able to get 4 or 5 from playoff Fitzsimons in the replay. And that was only when he was 19. So Con has had a lot of bigger games to play in, you know, than David Clifford. So it's like you're using something David can't control, you know, to make a case against him, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, no, I can. I don't. That was the one line I did not like. Until this Kerry team beat Dublin in the All-Ireland final, then I have a question mark over them. Maybe he can have a question mark collectively over the team, but like, if David Clifford is unbelievable in those games, you can't have a question mark over David Clifford. Do you know what I mean? He was able to control his own performance, and he has done, and he has been brilliant. Do you know what I mean? So the fact that Kerry haven't won the All-Ireland, to me, wouldn't take away from David Clifford's individual ability as a player to date. It was the same, like, obviously I'm in a good position to say it, but like that's been leveled at, that accusation has been leveled at Mayo a lot, and that, like, you know, that they never got over the line. So like that actually, obviously it does have to affect their perceptions of them as a team, but you can't take away from how good of a team I think they've been over the last few years, even though they never got over the line. So I think that's the line that Colm O'Rourke is applying to Clifford here. It's a kind of a lazy thing that's often thrown out. And I think it's unfair on Clifford in this instance, but I don't think Colm is going to have to wait long anyway. I think within a few years, Kerry will have won an All-Ireland, and Dave Clifford will have made the same impact in those finals that I mentioned that Conn has done for Dublin in the last few years.
Yeah, exactly. Now, listen, of course, like, I mean, we have to repeat that Conn O'Callaghan is a freak of a player as well. You know, like, I mean, so this is like the highest comparison you're judging Conn against. Like, I mean, he would blow away any other comparison, just not against David Clifford, as far as I'm concerned. Right. That's it. That's the last show before we kick off for Championship, Conor. So we're back with a new studio coming up on Thursday. We'll be sticking up the shows on to YouTube again. Have to say, I find putting shows done on Skype or on Zoom up on YouTube an insult to YouTube video. So we haven't done it. I just did not want to do it because I don't think it looks anyway good. But we have a new studio ready to stick the shows back up on YouTube. So anyone who's been missing them, and there have been people who have been asking me about that, we'll be back on YouTube with the hurling show and the football show on Thursday. So we'll talk to you all then. Good luck.
But this little dink ball, the only one in a crowded area where it's a fist pass, the weight is taken out, hits the ground and it bounces into a fella's chest.
Why do you not do many interviews?
Oh, really? Yeah, I've been asked to do a whole pile.
Really?
Yeah. Have you ever rang me?
And they're roaring at me, "I Caffrey, you Free State bastard." And next thing I hear, "You have no fucking jurisdiction up here."